There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
And here we go, FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile in hour number two on this Thursday. And, of course, our eyes half a world away as Russia overnight into, 5 o'clock, 5:55 this morning, Ukrainian time, invaded full-out assault on the country of Ukraine. We had the last of the press conference there from President Biden. More sanctions in the mix. You know, as I said at the end of Jeff Poor's show, beginning of this show, while it will hit the Russian people very hard, I think they are, if not sanction-proof, pretty sanction-resistant as a country because the expectations aren't where it would be elsewhere. And the changing of the guard in control of Russia is not something that I'm going to see happen anytime soon there. So we continue with, what we do, moving more troops. President said moving even more American troops to Europe here beyond what we've already done. Also more of the sanctions, the banking issues, those things for energy. And then I think later on in the press conference, he said something to the effect of, we'll give it a month and see how it does. So we'll keep our eyes on this and more of your texts and calls on this later on in the hour. We start off this hour and a guest that is great to have on, director for the University of Mobile Center for Leadership, Executive Dean, University of Mobile School of Christian Ministries, and a man that has spent a lot of time in Ukraine. Dr. Joe Savage joins us now. Dr. Savage, thanks for your time. Thanks for being on. And let's talk. Where's your heart this morning or this afternoon?
Well, Sean, I mean, at 12:15 this morning, I got up just to check out the news, see if there's any updates, because we work, and actually I head up an organization called Roads of Hope, which is a nonprofit working in Ukraine and Moldova and Eastern Europe, and been coming and going over there all the way back to the Soviet days 30 years ago. And wow. So I'm watching this, and I expected what Putin has done on the east side of Ukraine. But at 12:15, when I see firepower unleashed on Ukraine, amphibious forces coming into Odessa, the capital city of Kyiv being attacked, it's absolutely thuggish. I mean, it's horrific. No one, I don't think, expected him to do to that level across the entire country.
Yeah, I don't have the experience you do in Ukraine, but I didn't either. I mean, I saw the game being played by recognizing the sovereignty of those, Donbass and the areas in the east. And then he says, okay, well, I'm not really invading Ukraine. I'm coming into this independent country that's not Ukraine anymore. I thought that was the game that would be played for a while, but like you said, the gloves came off overnight and first thing this morning in Ukraine. And I mean, we're at 100+ missiles, ballistic and cruise missiles launched. We've seen the videos of the helicopter attacks, the plane attacks, let alone the tank battles going on. They've taken Chernobyl now. I mean, this is all out war.
It's totally a war. And, you know, and that's the piece that is surprising, is that this is not just to in some section of Ukraine. We're talking about from the north to the south to the west to the east. I mean, every corner of that entire country, which is about the size of Texas, is receiving missile strikes, firepower, raining down from Russian artillery. And Sean, one thing that we've got to keep in mind, while our troops certainly are not in the country, it's our weapons that we provided that's actually trying to defend Ukraine. all day today, and we'll continue on for however long. But it's a real difficult situation. There's no escape from this. A common citizen living in Ukraine this morning, it doesn't matter where you live, you're in harm's way. And by the end of the week, you could be calling yourself a Russian again, or at least under a Russian flag. It's an unbelievable series of events that's played out here today.
Talking to Dr. Joe Savage, who has spent decades and decades in that area of the world and in Ukraine. Let me obviously, all human beings are individuals, different different spirits in them. But overall, if we're going to talk about it, will they resist? Well, I mean, is the nationalism, has the concrete dried enough on that Ukrainian nationalism that you think they will resist beyond just in the trenches or in the tanks to partisan fights and guerrilla warfare?
Yes, but here's the interesting part of that, John, is that there's a river that goes right up through the heart of Ukraine. It's their primary river, if you will. Basically, everything to the east of that river, I mean, there's a lot of people. In fact, some of those cities on the east side of Ukraine, they would rather be under Russian rule. In fact, I've had some tell me, well, at least we would know what we get, as opposed to all the corruption and all the chaos and all the uncertainty of aligning themselves with Ukraine. That's how come this is no surprise to myself. Having spent so much time in Ukraine and keeping up with it. But when you move to the west of that river, you're talking about Ukrainian citizens that they will fight till the end. I mean, you've got common everyday people living in the capital city of Kyiv who has gone out and bought guns and bulletproof jackets and, trying to stockpile ammo. And the tragedy in it is, how in the world do people like me and you, Sean, if it happened here, I don't care how many guns and weapons you and I would have, how do you take on missiles being fired from Belarus or some other location? How do you take on tanks that's going to ultimately come rolling down the street? You can't do it. It's impossible to do. And that was a big mistake, I think, the United States and NATO and the EU has made is, while we strengthen the country in so many ways, we have left a huge gap, and that was in providing them with enough air defense, and enough naval defense. We haven't done it, and today it's biting Ukraine in the rear. It's killing Ukrainians, but it's going to bite all of us in the rear because of the cost of everything that's going to transpire here in the next several weeks, months, maybe even years. I hope not, but it's possible.
As we're trying to understand the lay of the land there in Ukraine, you point out, you're talking about the Dnieper, with the Dnieper River, or how do you pronounce it?
Yeah, that's right.
And as kind of a split between the people of Ukraine, even though Kyiv sits right there on the river, right? I mean, that's kind of front lines of that split.
Yeah, that's right. And, if you go back and you look at the history, we tend, in modern times, to look at snippets of information and you learn patterns from history. Things just repeat themselves over and over again. And one thing that we our snippets of news information has missed was going all the way back to our last World War. Stalin and the Russian regime came in, and they had taken over Ukraine, and they basically literally went door to door taking people's food, their chickens, their cows, their animals, and then they were required to send all of their wheat. Ukraine is extremely fertile. It's one of the darkest dirt, some of the best places in the world to grow crops. In fact, they have a huge wheat export. And so Stalin turned around, and he took all of people's food, and he literally starved, I believe it's like 4 million Ukrainians to death, starving to death. And you're talking, the adults our age, our grandparents would have told us about being starved by the Russians, dying of starvation, right? And so we'd be a part of our family history. That's how come one of the major reasons Ukrainians are going to fight at all costs. They hate Russia. They despise Russia. It's one of the reasons they changed the language and said, no longer are we going to be speaking Russian in this country. Ukrainian is the official language. It's what's going to be in our schools. We're not tolerating any kind of Russian presence in our borders. That was more difficult to achieve on the east side of Ukraine because there's so many Russian people. But on the west side of Ukraine, they have tried to stamp it out entirely. And they literally hate Russia. And they have reason to have that kind of anger towards this morning towards the Russians, because they're not going to give in to them, period. It's not going to happen. Now, can they stand up to them like President Zelensky's asked them to do? They'll try. But can you take on that kind of air power? I don't know if it's possible. I mean, he's already taken out airports, entire Air Force fields coming in through the Black Sea, there along the coast. They're in a real heap of a mess. There's no way they can win this war today by the end of the week. No possible way to do it.
Dr. Savage, I wonder if, and it's good for people, and probably pulled up their maps too, and many people have probably become way more familiar with the country of Ukraine over the last 3 weeks. But, you know, part of where my mind was pre what has just happened was that you might have a Crimea situation, that you would get a beachhead established by Putin, and you say, well, that's good. But like you said, they're launching attacks as far as Lviv, right, in the west of Ukraine. Do you think it is a total takeover of Ukraine, or do you think they're going to sue for peace, right? Okay, we're going to take everything from the Dnieper River back to the east, and we'll stop, which we all know would be for now. They would come back. Or do you think, you're feeling what you're seeing. This is, they want the whole country. Russians want the entirety.
Well, my feeling was that he was going to try to get to the river and maybe take the coast, because he could squeeze out the Black Sea from Ukraine. But, I mean, for instance, the United States embassy personnel, while State Department asked them to move out, and most of them went to Poland or elsewhere, they moved a small group from the capital of Kiev over to Lviv, which sits in the northwest corner, close to Poland. It's a very European city, beautiful city, tremendous history there. Well, they moved them there because, I mean, our government clearly didn't think that he would be firing on Lviv this morning, I don't think. And, you know, a lot of, you see those lines of hundreds or not, I mean, maybe thousands of vehicles trying to get out of Kiev, and they're all trying to take these. It's not very many highways, and once you leave the city, the highways aren't that great anyway. I've driven that road many times. And when you get out and you start trying to go to Poland, a few hours away, I can't imagine. Are there going to be enough gas stations to fuel those cars up? What happens when they get to Poland? Are they going to just open the borders and let these people in? I mean, if Russia's firing even as far west as Lviv, which is the exit point to get to Poland, what happens to these thousands upon tens of thousands of people trying to flee right now, sitting in their vehicles stuck in the highway?
I don't know. There's
really
some
very, very complex. I don't know how the U.S. is going to handle that, or how Poland's going to handle that, even for that matter, how Hungary or any of these other nations that sits in close proximity is going to handle it. It's just like the people I've talked to in the middle of the night, they told me, look, we're sitting here with our suitcases, but we don't know what to do. And, you know, I got in some conversations trying to just at least encourage them, but they don't know. Do you sit and you wait, trying, you know, in your home just simply to see how it plays out? Or do you grab your suitcase and your children, you get in a car, and you start trying to drive to escape a country that just became under attack from corner to corner? That is a tough, tough place to be this morning. And then once you get to the west, are they going to allow you in? Because traditionally in the past, you had to have certain papers to be able to get into Europe. Are they going to be wide open and let these people in? Who knows? I mean, usually you had to have some money to be able to get out because you could be able to buy the right papers to get out.
Dr. Savage, I've got some reports. Now, you know how everything is through the fog of war right now. Some reports that the first refugees have entered Poland, and I know that President Biden spoke about the humanitarian aid there, too. But let's talk about that. You know, is Poland able to receive, I mean, what, there are 44 million Ukrainians, right? So I don't know how, let's say 5 million Ukrainians flee. Is, I mean, from your knowledge in that region, is Poland ready to accept that? Where do you put those people? How do you deal with it?
Yeah, and I think it's similar to any of these countries we've seen go to war and people begin to flee. What do you do with them? How does that work? I mean, we saw this with Syria. The Syrians fleeing across that little strip of ocean there into Greece, and then people were on their feet. I mean, I was in those refugee camps. I saw the conditions. I know exactly what was going on. And then the byproduct of that, for instance, I work in anti-trafficking. That's what my organization, Rose of Hope, does in trying to protect orphans, because we're dealing with two of the most one of the greatest areas of human trafficking in the world. Well, in Syria, people got to France and they opened up these giant refugee camps and they weren't ready. I know of one case, for instance, where 100 children that didn't have any adults with them, 100 children just got, people walked in there and took these kids.
Oh, my Lord.
Just walked straight into a camp and took them out. And so, you know, to answer your question, you've got all of these people fleeing. We saw this in 2014. When Russia came into the Donbass, the Donetsk, you've probably heard of that, that's on the news, in Luhansk, those two big areas, there would be like smaller states to us. But when he came in with Russian soldiers, they didn't have Russia insignias on them, right? It was this undercover rogue military, if you will, and that's where the 15,000 Ukrainians have died in that war. Well, for instance, the orphans, which is our biggest thing that we work with, they began to just move them all over the Ukraine, trying to get them to safety. But hundreds of children disappeared in that process. They don't even know what happened to them. And we end up taking some of those in. We've helped, tried to help as many as we could. But, you know, you're talking about families getting split up today. You're talking about, you know, do you leave the grandmother behind? What happens to a family whose father is sick? What happens to someone who's on oxygen? What happens to their homes? I mean, do you pick up? I mean, people were rushing to the bank trying to get funds out, and trying to get their money. Well, the money, a lot of people couldn't get their money. So are they going to go walking into Poland without documentation, without money to live where? I mean, this is a mess. I'll tell you what, Sean, we will see how serious and how prepared the European Union, NATO, and the United States, for that matter, how serious and how prepared we've really been by our response in the next few hours. I mean, President Biden a while ago gave his address, and that was good. Some of those things were good of the sanctions. However, you heard a question asked from the media, a member of the media, why are you not putting the sanctions on Putin?
Right.
He skipped right over it. He didn't answer it. He's skipping over the SWIFT bank account. He talked his way out of that. The bottom line is, the United States and our NATO allies should bring absolute hell down on the Russian government leaders. Hit the SWIFT bank account, hit them with real sanctions, squeeze the gas, and the United States needs to quit buying 7% of our oil and gas from Russia. That needs to stop. That should have stopped a long time ago, but it certainly should be stopping today. I mean, when we're talking about, get this, Sean, 3 million barrels of Russian oil comes to the United States per day.
Unbelievable.
Why are we doing that?
Well, it's a question.
Crazy. Yeah, absolutely not. It should never be allowed.
Well,
and so that should be shut down today.
Well,
I could go on and on and on.
And agree.
Four or five more of these.
Well, let's do this.
That we're committing along this in this whole picture.
Can you hold on to those? We got to go to the news break and come right back.
Sure, absolutely.
All right, we return to our conversation with Dr. Savage next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. We will go to the news update here from USA Radio News. And when we come back, more of our conversation with Dr. Savage, who's spent decades in Ukraine and the region. We'll talk more about where he feels these sanctions need to be expanded against Russia. And also, we think about this right now as a northern front and an eastern front. Is there a western front lying in wait out there where Russian troops are on the other side of this offensive? We'll talk about that too when we come back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. As we watch all-out war, it started late last night our time, 5:55 this morning, Ukrainian time, and learning more about this country that we've talked so much about from the outside looking in. We're talking about it from the inside with our guest, Dr. Joe Savage, with the University of Mobile Center for Leadership, also Executive Dean for the University of Mobile School of Christian Ministries. And you told us, since it was Soviet, right, you have been going to Ukraine. I mean, decades and decades going there.
Yeah, well, I was not in Ukraine in 1989, but Ukraine was part of the Soviet Union. I was in Moscow. And, Sean, real quick, just to correct, to be clear, I'm no longer with the University of Mobile.
Okay.
I'm not sure where that came from, but I was for several years and loved being there. But now I am full-time with my organization called Roads of Hope, going in and out of Ukraine, Moldova, other Eastern European countries, doing anti-trafficking work, trying to rescue orphans and get them into family homes. That's what I do every day.
And you already have the amount of what you're doing with Roads of Hope and the number of children that are already, saving them from trafficking there. I mean, I make this even sadder, but that number of vulnerable children is now going through the roof. I can't imagine it won't.
Yeah, and you've got to remember, I know as recent as 2017, Ukraine was listed as the ninth most corrupt nation in the world. As recent as last year, they were listed as the number two most corrupt nation in all of Europe. Number two to who? Russia. So Russia was one, Ukraine was two. Certainly where we work in Moldova should have been, would be right there at number two or number three easy, because they're all working basically the same way. So you've got extremely corrupt government leaders, and there's been a lot of mistakes made through this, and something that a lot of people probably aren't talking about today or haven't been talking about is, I love Ukraine, I love the people. But also, Ukraine has had a history of corruption, which is in part why our government wasn't willing to do more within the country. I mean, I know for a fact, I sat three blocks from the White House 4 years ago in a meeting, closed-door meeting with all these experts in regards to Ukraine on the ground, and I know for a fact, and I know this personally, when we have materials going in, whether it be humanitarian aid or military support or what have you, you can count on a good portion of that never making it where it's supposed to go. And, you know, this has been a history for 20 years. That's a whole nother day story of how much money has disappeared in that country through the years, through the last couple of decades, and continue on. I mean, it ties into the Hunter Biden story. It ties in to Soros. It ties into an anti-corruption organization that was created in Ukraine to watch over corruption and prevent it. Well, that was set up to run money through. That's all about, I probably shouldn't say, because it's going to get me in trouble. But I'm tired and sick of politicians playing the game of politics when they don't care about people. That's my concern, Sean. Bottom line is, politicians should be caring about people, not their pocketbooks, not their prestige, not their futures. They should be caring about people today. And we have allowed corruption on both sides of the camp, but especially on that Democratic side. I know it for a fact. Money gets funneled in and it gets funneled out. Even money by the millions coming into Ukraine and funneling into Russia. And I think in part, that's why Putin decided to do this now, because that was starting to finally be squeezed a bit. And hey, you cut that supply off, and Ukraine started becoming stronger, and U.S. has weak leadership, Europe has extremely weak leadership, I better do this now, or I may not be able to do it in 5 years. I've got to go now, and that's what Putin did.
Oh, so, wow. So the not only the flow coming into Ukraine and bouncing back to the States, there was... Putin was wetting his beak off the off what was coming into Ukraine as well, and that was starting to get shut down. Is that what you're saying?
What I'm saying is I think President Zelensky, and certainly, I mean, the corruption is so bad. I mean, let's take the state of Texas. It's the size of Texas, right, with 44 million people, whatever it is. How would you, if you had a history of corruption in Texas, every city was corrupt, can you imagine trying to clean that up? If it's its own entity, its own government, it would be, it takes years to do it in the right leadership because, you know, if not, you don't get you can't get elected in that country unless you play the certain game in the dance and have so much money. I always jokingly said every politician, if they want to get elected in Ukraine, they better go buy themselves a black Mercedes. And it's about image. But what I'm saying is that money has come in from the West to help supply humanitarian aid, for instance, or to help in other ways. And that money ends up, you know, of course, let's say 90% ends up where it should go. Well, 10% is going to end up, let's say 5%, I'm making the numbers up at this point, but let's be generous and say 90% gets where it needs to go. 5% ends up in Russia, and 5% ends up in political offices, leaders, offices across the country of Ukraine, and part of it comes back, not directly, but indirectly, to some of our own political leaders. Hence the whole Hunter Biden deal.
So the money that they're using to buy American influence is American money that went there in the first place. It's rechanneled back to the United States.
It gets channeled through, just like Putin does it. Exactly like Putin does. It's using third party. It's using other accounts. It's using, Hunter was too stupid to realize how to do it. I mean, it's offshore accounts. It's money going from Ukraine that gets spun off or even weapons sold off. And, I mean, this is a rogue, corrupt country with great people. And I think Zelensky started trying to squeeze that and cut off some of that supply. And that's where I believe Putin today said, I've got to do something about this. Not today, but it's been planned. We got to strike now. And, because it's not about, it's really not about power. It's about dollars. The whole thing comes down to dollars. And making money.
Dr. Savage, more than territorial integrity, or as I've called it, Putin wanting to put the band back together with the old Soviet Union footprint, or these ethnic clashes, it's more follow the money? Like we've heard so many things, follow the money.
I think for Putin.
For Putin.
He loves the motherland. He loved the old Soviet regime. He loved the sickle and the hammer. He loved, the KGB. He was a KGB guy. I mean, that's his heart. Right. I mean, when he talks about the motherland, I think he's sincere in that. However, a good portion of it is about the money. I mean, it's all kind of about money coming in and flowing into Ukraine, the cover of darkness in bags by the millions. I know that for a fact.
Wow.
I'm talking about politicians over there padding their pockets. And making money. I'm talking about organizations making money. I'm talking about anti-corruption organizations that's supposed to get rid of corruption making side money. And I'm talking about American politicians. And I don't want to get into this today, Sean, but the worst human trafficker in the last 100 years came out of Moldova. And he was in bed with Merkel in Germany, and he was in bed with Texas Republican leaders. It was mind-boggling to me that they allow this horrible human being to have free reign and gets invited to their parties across Europe because he's got all this money, and the money was made originally off of the backs of trafficking children. And then he bought the TV station. Then he bought the hotel. Then he began to use blackmail. And what do? Because the guy shows up with money, we roll out the red carpet for him. And that kind of nonsense got to stop, or the world's going to end up in a place that none of us want. Because it shouldn't be going on, and people shouldn't be getting rich off of poor people, and shouldn't be getting rich off of orphans especially.
The work you mentioned this with Roads of Hope and the work you do in Moldova. Let's talk about that too. And if I don't pronounce it correctly, help me here. But you and I talked off the air, and I have heard little bits and pieces about Transnistria, or how do I pronounce that?
It's called Transnistria.
Okay. What is that? Explain to folks here. What is Transnistria? What is that, and how does it relate to Moldova?
It is a fascinating place if you're a historian. When the Soviet Republic broke into the Soviet Union broke into small republics, right? Which mm-hmm. is where Ukraine got their freedom, Moldova right. got their freedom, Lithuania, Estonia, etc. And everybody declared their independence and became their own nation. Great thing. Well, in Moldova, which is landlocked, and they kind of got cut out of the deal as far as getting access to a legitimate port, they ended up, which is Moldova, John, borders is a small, small country, the poorest nation in Europe, maybe second to Ukraine, depends what chart you're looking at. But this small little country is sitting there called Moldova. And so there was a small piece of Moldova, it is called Transnistria. They wanted to continue to be in alignment with the old Soviet Union. You go there right now, and I've been there several times. They still have a hammer and sickle flag flying in their country. It is in Moldova, but they broke away as its own republic. Now, it's interesting. Here's where it gets really fascinating. Our media has said they're encircled. And they show the dots on the map of Russian soldiers in the north of Ukraine, the east of Ukraine, and out in the Black Sea. Mm-hmm. What they haven't shown much of is on the west side, which is that little land bordering between Ukraine and Moldova. Technically, it's Moldova. And that was the largest, has been, and is right now today, the largest stockpile of Russian artillery and weapons in all of Eastern Europe. Sits in Transnistria right now today. Even though it's Moldova, the Russians have kept 1,500 soldiers guarding that ammo, guarding that depot, if you will. That government has stayed loyal to Russia. They're dependent on Russia. They get all their gas, everything they have there. And this little place called Transnistria is sitting there with their own troops, Transnistrian troops, wearing the sickle and the hammer with 5,000 soldiers plus Putin's 1,500 guarding the largest artillery in all of Eastern Europe. It's been there since the fall of the Soviet Union in 1990. And that they've been guarding it. When Ukraine began to go against Russia, it used to be that Russian soldiers came right through Ukraine and straight to Transnistria. Ukraine cut that off, so they started coming through the airport. I would see them. And then Moldova said, okay, we're going to cut that off. We can't allow that anymore. And I began to see these 23-year-olds with short haircuts and Russian accents flying in blue jeans and T-shirts. They're Russian soldiers flying into Moldova to get to Transnistria to guard this stockpile of weapons, which is the Wild West. That one place, Sean, Transnistria, that one place is the hub of all the corruption, the major corruption of all of Europe is in Transnistria, from women, trafficking of women, to trafficking of weapons, all coming out of Transnistria, and everybody's looked the other way because people are making money. I don't know exactly who, but they're making money on it. And this morning, right now, these soldiers and all these weapons are sitting there technically in Moldova, but right on the edge of Ukraine.
So I see the attacks in Odessa as well, which is not far. I mean, it's just right across water, right? I mean, just a small inlet there from Transnistria.
There's a small bridge. I've driven it several times. It's a small highway. It would be like us taking Highway 90 to Mississippi.
Okay.
That's about how far it is. Over to Biloxi or Pascagoula. I mean, it's like us going over that small little river over there. And so that's how close all this is to an area called Belgorod and Ostrovsky in the southwest corner. Then you drive another 45 minutes on a two-lane highway. Hoss Mack's been there with me before, Sheriff Mack has. Is that you go from there into Odessa that sits on the port, which is the major, major port for Ukraine. And last night, or early this morning, Russian amphibious forces came straight into Odessa and that region. So what Transnistria can do, if they need it, is they can go straight across, take the port of Belgorod and Ostrovsky. They take the port of Odessa. They move on the coast because Ukraine doesn't have a navy anymore at this point. Russia took all the ships in 2014. And the bottom line is now they have the entire coast from Transnistria, really from Romania, over to the Russian border. They would own it all, including Crimea, which is this massive navy base now for the Russians.
Can you hang on for one more break to finish out the hour with us?
Yeah, sure.
All right, coming right back, more of our conversation with Dr. Joe Savage. Obviously, the amount of detail here in that region is amazing. I've been taking notes the whole time, and we'll come back and get more next right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
At 1:55, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Continuing our conversation with Dr. Joe Savage, the decades of experience there are showing. You've been there, obviously, in a charity capacity, trying to save these children. But obviously, you can't be there and not know how the country works or does not work in a lot of cases. Correct?
Yeah, and that's one of the things that, you know, we do anti-trafficking, so we've done some rescues and that sort of thing. And I've been all over that whole region over, I mean, so many times for years now. And I understand it. And, you know, I always jokingly say I take seven orphan homes in Moldova and two apartments that we support. And then we do other work across much of Eastern Europe. And that's the home piece. That's where we're taking care of children once we get them into a family environment, which is our goal. But then there's this other side, this seedy, dark, dark side that's evil and horrible, and that's the anti-trafficking. That's the rescues. That's the battle against the Russian mob who's trafficking children out of there and women out of there, and it's, you know, it's horrific. And when I say out of there, I'm talking about Ukraine and Moldova primarily at this point. And it's been going on. It's an old business, and people's made a lot of money on it. And so what I've learned in this is I'm a street guy, Sean. So I've been invited. I spend a lot of time with the politicians, which I'm concerned for their lives today in Ukraine. But also then I'm in the thuggy places. I've seen the women sold. I've seen them being trafficked. I mean, firsthand with my own eyes. And I know their patterns. I know how it works because I have to know how it works. Why? If I'm going to save a kid or rescue a kid, I've got to know what's going on, not just for my own safety's sake, but also for the sake of the people that work with us. And so you follow the trafficking patterns. You also get to follow the patterns of the weapons because it's all the bad people. I mean, bad people do bad things. And they're never satisfied. It's never enough. So they start trying to do more and more and more, which ties in what we talked about earlier about Transnistria and you know, corruption across the country and all of that. So, I mean, I've been on the ground enough, and I don't know, Sean, I think God's given me a gift of being able to kind of know what's going on, put two and two together and add it up to four and be willing to step into those places that oftentimes aren't talked about.
Joe, tell folks as we get ready to close out the hour, but you're going to have to come back soon. We've talked about Roads of Hope a couple times. How do people find out more information about the charity?
Well, they can go to our website, which is roadsofhope.org. That's plural, roadsofhope.org. And also we're on Facebook at Roads of Hope. And we're on Instagram. And, you know, what we are very reserved in talking about the trafficking piece and these things I'm talking about today. I'm taking a great risk. And I get it. I understand it. But enough's enough. And people need to know and need to understand how fragile all of this really is and the part that it can play, even with us being right here in Mobile, Alabama today.
We'll keep this story going, and we'll have you back on the show very soon. Thank you for your time. Thank you for the education.
Thank you, Sean. I appreciate it.
All right, there he is, our guest, Dr. Joe Savage, and we'll be back tomorrow. Of course, keep up to date on our social media feeds, the latest from half a world away and right here at home. Paul Feinbaum Show is next.